Ah, together again.
Indeed. Indeed, indeed. Welcome to episode 10. You believe this?
Hey.
They put up with us for 10 weeks.
And you know what? Still going strong.
It is indeed easy for me to say. Let's try that again. Episode 10 of Upon Further Review.
With the podcast profs.
And he is?
Dr. Soren Fanning, Associate Professor of World History here at lovely Robert Morris University. And you are?
Dr. Anthony Moretti, Associate Professor of Communication in the School of Communication and Information Systems. And the voice in our head is?
I'm going to just start making up new names every week.
There you go.
But pseudonym.
There you go. But on his
nom de plume.
On his nom de guerre, if he wants to go to war, right?
Well, we don't want to do that.
Not yet. All right.
But, and by the way, welcome back from the swamp.
Indeed. So, indeed. And rumor has it you might be going to swampland this weekend to
less
to
said
go to
the
Washington.
Better. Less yes. said the better.
Yes. Washington, D.C. I had a group of students and a faculty colleague there last week for a conference titled Double Exposure, the Investigative Film Festival. Some fascinating, fascinating people, both on the journalism side, some of the names I knew, but on the investigative film and documentary filmmaking side, none of the names were familiar to me. The courage that some of these people have doing the job they do. And you imagine in a country like the United States, having the courage to ask questions that make people upset, and then you sort of extrapolate that out and wonder what it's like in countries where leaders don't want you asking
oh, right.
those
Absolutely.
Questions. And have apparatus in place to really make sure that...
Like Russia.
Know, like Russia, for example, or North Korea, or Syria, or any other place in the world that's where a media system is considered not free.
And by the way, you brought fall with you back.
I am so glad.
Oh, it's nice out there.
I am so glad.
You know, I can finally actually wear clothes with long sleeves now.
Yes, yes.
It's nice.
It is about time. And John over here, or whatever nom de plume he wants this morning, was informing me that he broke down earlier than usual this year.
Richie Incognito.
Indeed. And he is wearing jeans.
Nice.
No shorts for him today. So
that's when you know the weather's
yes
turned.
Yes.
Well, that then we got a World Series going on.
We do. Go Astros.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. Yeah.
I am hoping the Astros win for a couple of reasons. One, of the two teams, that's my preferred team to see win.
Well, and Houston's really taken it on the chin over the summer.
It has. It would be nice to see the city of Houston get, you know, something really cool. And it also would be, I think the last time a Houston team won a championship was the Rockets back
Probably.
In, 94. Five-ish.
Is that the Hakeem Olajuwon era? Wow.
Yeah, I think that was 95, wasn't it?
Something like that.
I'll have to look it up to be sure, but I don't recall. I mean, the Astros have been to the World Series once in 05 and did not win. The Rockets have not won again since, I think, 95, and the Oilers didn't win before
slash
they left.
Texans.
And the Texans have not yet won since they have appeared in the NFL, or the No Future League.
Yeah, go Houston there.
Although I think the WNBA Houston Comets won a couple of championships. So, but of the big four men's sports, nothing since the and wasn't Clyde Drexler on that team too?
I think he was.
I think he was before he got traded to.
Because that's back when I followed basketball.
Was it Portland he got dealt to? I think
maybe.
I think it was Portland.
But you know, as much as Houston's taken it on the chin.
America has taken it worse?
Well, the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico. Bear in mind, we're about a month out.
Yeah, but they're not real Americans, according to, you know, certain political types.
Ignorant idiots, yeah.
Well, that,
but,
that
I mean,
too.
The bulk of the island, remember, you got about 3.7 million people there. Mm-hmm. Not only do they not have power, they don't have clean water, mm-hmm. so we're seeing typhus and cholera show mm-hmm. up again.
I've read several stories over the past couple of weeks that have suggested that 3.7 million is going to be a heck of a lot lower before this is all said and done. That people who have the ability to move to the United States with family or friends or have the resources to do it if they don't have family or friends are coming, especially to Florida and the Southeast, and they're not leaving.
Well, and which is going to change. And by the way, which is going to change a couple things. Number one, remember, in a couple of years, we're going to have another census.
Mm-hmm.
Which I fully expect Florida to actually leapfrog New York as to the number three electoral prize.
Wouldn't surprise me.
But that's also going to shift the demographics
mm-hmm.
of the state. Although, ironically, the number two destination for a lot of Puerto Ricans is New York.
Is indeed New York.
So it could get interesting there from that perspective, but it's a shame that people get displaced like that.
You and I have sold our souls. We have decided we're going to make America great again.
I was going to say, we sold our souls. Where's the receipt? Because I didn't get a check.
Well, I was in journalism, so my soul went out the door a long time ago. There's a great joke about some journalist, and it's he spent his life drinking and womanizing and never going home and smoking and all these sorts of vices, and St. Peter is reading this list as the guy gets to the gates of heaven, and he looks at the bottom and goes, journalist. He goes, oh, you've already done your time in hell. Come on in.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm counting on that. No,
there you go.
Well, so, yes, we are going to make America great again. However,
the right way.
Not in the image and likeness of Donald Trump.
No, and I think a moment needs to be said that the Stockholm syndrome that is afflicting the Republican Party is growing ever more intense.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people gave Arizona Senator Jeff Flake a lot of credit, and actually used words like courage for the speech he gave. What was that, Tuesday?
That was Tuesday of this week.
He announced he wasn't going to be running for re-election and essentially urged his colleagues in the Senate to act like a co-equal check and balance on the executive branch. Now, a couple things happen after observations I'd like to make about that.
Mm-hmm.
Observation number one is that immediately Lindsey Graham began cozying up to Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine how well that's going to go over. But the second thing is, with the exception of John McCain, everyone who's speaking out against Trump
has
is doing so as surrendering.
Yes.
You know, you announce you're not going to seek re-election and then you speak your conscience?
Yep.
Isn't that somewhat self-defeating?
That is wimpy, in my opinion. And I wrote something similar on that theme on my blog this week, which essentially was, will somebody with something to lose go ahead and speak up against this guy? And again, I'm referring specifically to Republicans in Congress. And, I've not found one yet. John McCain, yes, at times. But John McCain always is a bit of a fireball. You never quite know what day of the week he's going to say something.
And bear in mind, the man just won re-election last year.
Yep.
So he's got another 5 years left in his term.
And he is 80 or 81. And, sadly, he's probably not going to make that 5-year term because of the form of cancer that he has.
Right.
He is the maverick. Funny quick story before we get on to Making America Great Again, the non-Donald Trump version. The two of the students I was with in Washington last week were walking out of the Naval Heritage Center.
Okay.
They pass this guy who, out of the corner of their eye, looks familiar to them, and he says hello to both of them as he keeps walking, and as they keep walking, and it was John McCain.
Really?
Indeed it was.
Just
out on the streets.
There you go.
All right, you go first. How do we, or what is your first way of making America great again, the non-Donald Trump version, on this week's Upon Further Review with the Podcast Profs?
I think the absolute first priority is to, in many ways, be the anti-Trump. You have to understand the man's entire strategy for getting power. Well, he does. It's an odious one, but he does have a strategy.
He does.
Which is simply to accentuate differences. Famously, the great phrase about the House divided against itself.
Mm-hmm.
We have got to realize that when we talk about political differences, at the end of the day, we're ultimately talking about differences in opinion on delivery mechanisms rather than objectives. I've yet to hear someone come out and say, I'm against the idea of having children educated.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard that argument. Or I'm against the idea of people having enough food to eat.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a common ground, but unfortunately for the past, I would argue, I'd say 23 years, there's been a decided strategy to portray those with whom we disagree as not just disagreeing, not even mistaken, but as somehow nefarious.
fundamentally wrong.
That has to end, ultimately.
Fundamentally wrong in a way that makes them, for lack of a better phrase, less American than I am in the context. All right. My first way that I see of making America great again, the non-Donald Trump version, is to view our partners as our partners.
Right.
Yes, NATO has flaws. I'm not going to deny that. Yes, the United Nations has flaws. Not going to deny that. Yes, the Western European democracies have flaws. Not going to deny that.
Yeah, but I mean, if your standard is perfection, though,
exactly.
What are you going to? You're not going to find nothing.
But those organizations, those countries, that bloc, for lack of a better phrase, has done more good than harm in the world. And
by a long shot.
And you and I have talked about this in a different context as well. The more you demean the institutions,
right.
Capital I, the more you demean the institutions, the more you erode the confidence of the entire system.
Correct.
And that's something that, we know Russia is doing quite well. All right?
Right.
Second one for you.
And this one's much more as opposed to a sort of fond hope, which my first one was. This one's a genuine, concrete policy. We have got to amend the U.S. Constitution to forbid private campaign contributions. Because private campaign contributions, at their heart, are essentially legalized bribes. And now, look, a constitutional amendment is by design a heavy lift. But it's by no means impossible. And actually, if you want to look at a good playbook to follow, look at prohibition. The people who wanted to get the Prohibition Amendment adopted, they took on a decade-long program where they tracked every single elected member of the U.S. Congress and basically said, whatever your other position, we only care about where you stand on this. And if you're with us, we will support you regardless of where you stand on anything else. And if you're against us, we will work to get you defeated. And by the way, this is an issue where the far left, the far right, and everyone in between actually agrees. You get something like 80 to 85% public support for this idea. And I would think that's that's priorities 1 through 10.
The biggest challenge I see with that, and I agree with the idea of restricting the amount of money, is that since the Supreme Court essentially equated money with speech, First Amendment issue that I'm not sure is going to be overcome.
Well, that's why you have to amend the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because, you remember, up until the 13th Amendment, black people weren't people,
mm-hmm.
according to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
Until the 19th Amendment, women weren't people. So occasionally you do have to amend the Constitution. Where I, with respect, completely dissent from the court's decision is if you're equating money with speech, then you're saying by definition, some people in this country have more speech than others.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we are not equal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I just have a fundamental problem with that.
I go along with that. All right. My second Make America Great, the non-Donald Trump issue or version, is to fundamentally fix but not do away with Obamacare. And I think eventually truly fixing it is probably going to mean a single payer system.
Oh, I'll go one step further. I would make the argument, and I think in the next 30 to 40 years, this is going to become inescapable. I think right now we have a fundamental problem that the bare necessities of life, that is food, that is shelter, that is clean water, that is also, by the way, healthcare. Not access to healthcare, actual healthcare.
Actual healthcare.
The problem is we've commoditized it. In other mm-hmm. words, it's available only as an ability to pay commodity. And I think at the end of the day, what is going to be the big philosophical wrestling match for the millennial generation is going to be this question, are they rights or privileges? And I think as time goes on, and every poll I've seen actually supports this, people increasingly in the United States are seeing it as a human right.
Mm-hmm.
So
as it is in almost every of those Western, in every of those Western democracies that I hinted at
right, those post-industrial developed societies.
And again, I am not saying that a single-payer, government-heavy, involved healthcare system is going to be perfect. I am not suggesting.
Well, and we're not talking about delivery systems.
Precisely. We are talking about, if you're going to go back to your question of a right versus a privilege, I believe healthcare is a right, not a privilege.
Correct.
But that also goes back to the speech question of a couple of seconds ago, where right. if speech is a privilege, then I'm allowed to have more of it than you, or I suffer from it less than you, et cetera.
And the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution would tend to argue against that.
All right, so we have two sort of broader focus ideas at this point.
Sure.
Of what we'll largely call how government is run, how we deal with the other, for
right.
lack of a better phrase. Now, we have a couple of concrete ideas, one being money, one being healthcare. What do you also have on the Make America Great Again, non-Donald Trump version?
Do you guys mind if I make my rare chime in on
yeah,
this one?
Yeah,
by all means.
Please.
I think that we need to stop making issues really fuzzy, and we need to actually talk about them, because the problem with healthcare right now is people blame the insurers.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, they're the ones who ultimately charge most people, but they charge people because of the doctors who have the right to just charge whatever amount they want, because mm-hmm. healthcare is completely arbitrarily priced.
Well, you're absolutely correct.
Like, don't get me wrong. Like, a surgery is going to be relatively expensive, sure, but does my 5-minute checkup really justify $50?
Mm-hmm. Right, or why does, for example, a hip replacement in the U.S. cost $150,000, but in Spain costs like $6,000?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of issues, if you ask me, come down to we don't talk about the actual issue. We talk about the most immediate part of the issue that we deal with.
Right.
Well, and it also I look at my doctor, and I don't want to think of him or her as being corrupt or nefarious.
In it for the money.
Or in it for the money. But I look at the insurance company and I think, I don't know who the heck, you know, who's
sure.
UPMC, you know? I mean, I deal with UPMC, but I don't know anybody
right.
that intimately, for lack of a better
phrase.
Well,
it's a corporation. It's not an individual.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm not picking on UPMC. It could be Highmark, could be Aetna, could be Blue Cross, could be any of them. We are inclined to see the people that we deal with on a daily basis as being good. And so therefore the bad guy, quote unquote, has to be that thing out there that we don't realize or not realize that we don't personalize as well.
Exactly. No, and John, I think you're absolutely right. And the problem right now with dealing with complex issues is, number one, you do have outside money coming in
mm-hmm.
to put the fist on the scale. But the other thing is, when we're in a situation in which everything is so polarized, you can't talk nuance. You
exactly.
can't talk about the real complexities of this issue, because, yes, it is the fact that healthcare is for profit, but it also, why do doctors charge so much? In part because they have to carry huge insurance premiums,
mm-hmm.
in part because people sue for malpractice,
mm-hmm.
but you have to have the right to sue for malpractice. So it is completely complicated.
Well, again, what we've done to some extent is, instead of talking about the issue, we've made it, if you're with me, you're right. If you're against me, you're wrong.
Right.
Which goes back to a point
correct,
we
I should say.
Earlier. Yep. Yep.
So, no, you're absolutely right, John.
Yeah, and then you can even expand that easily to things like taxes, because people want easy taxes. But the truth is, if your taxes are easy, they're not fair.
Right.
Because, like, it makes sense to generalize taxes as much as possible, but then why is somebody who is giving almost all of their money away to charity paying the same amount of taxes as somebody who just hoards all of their money and reinvests it in the stock market?
Right.
And then, should you be making a different tax rate because money earned
mm-hmm.
by labor is different than money earned by investment?
Investment.
The more you
now,
simplify
personally,
things,
I think
the
yes,
more unfair it is.
You're right. And, you know, I tend to agree with the idea that I think wages versus income from other sources should be different. And this is the way I actually explain it to my classes. Every country in the world, every government on earth has the same sort of Hobson's choice to make. You can have strong national defense. You have a population that is healthy and mobile, and you have low taxes. You can pick any two of those three, but you can't have all three.
Mm-hmm.
And the and what every political debate essentially comes down to is which of those, which two of those three are we prepared to accept? Because right now we have the strong national defense and we have the low taxes. And that's actually getting to my last item on the.
And by the way, those taxes might get lower.
Perhaps we'll have to see, because again, if you thought overhauling 1/5 of the U.S. economy through healthcare was a big lift, wait till this one. I'll be stunned if we see anything before Memorial Day. I got to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the last bit, I think this is the important one, and I'm deliberately keeping these vague because I don't want to get into discussions about delivery mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, if you want a democratic and free society to survive, the number one indicator of how well that's going to work is, does the population have evidence that if you follow the rules and work hard, it is not just possible but probable that you can improve the status of your family? In other words, let's take the example of Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh in the late 1800s, lovingly described as hell with the lid off because of all the foundries.
Mm-hmm.
You had enormous numbers of people working themselves to the bone in blue collar jobs so their kids could have white collar jobs.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, since roughly Richard Nixon,
mm-hmm.
it has not been probable you can advance through your own efforts. It's now openly being called into question if that's possible. And when that happens, the likelihood of unrest, of rebellion, of revolution goes up.
Mm-hmm. There's only so many times, you know, the analogy that I always use, only so much air you can put in a balloon before it bursts. There are only so many times you can tell somebody no. There are only so many times you can say, wait your turn. There's only so many times you can say, not yet. There's only so many times you can say, it's, you know, not you, somebody else, before
The metaphorical table gets flipped.
It's flipped, yeah. and it won't be good. Third one for me, or a third mm-hmm. one for me, would be the idea of and I find myself in agreement with Trump to some extent on this issue, is the idea that America's infrastructure has got to be significantly upgraded. But I'm not talking about just roads and bridges and highways and that sort of thing. I'm talking about things like high-speed rail.
Right.
I'm talking things like more airline choices or options, those sorts of things. In essence, I'm talking about a.
How about just a rail system? Period.
Well, yeah. You know, the idea, and again, it's not perfect, but you've been to Europe before,
sure,
and you know this. I've been to Europe before. I know you could darn near hop on a train in the far most western part of France, and you could darn near get to the far most eastern part of Russia on a train in Europe, and
with fairly little hassle.
And for the most part, the trains are going to work.
Right.
And for the most part, the system is going to run. Amtrak does a fantastic job for the limitations that it's up against.
And they're under some enormous limitations.
Enormous limitations, not the least of which is they often share the rails with the cargo trains.
And that have priority.
I was just going to say, and guess which one goes first when they're both coming through. So, you know, to me, infrastructure means not only improving or strengthening what's there, but improving what's not there.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, you know, when you're talking about these great dreams, imagine an Ottawa to Mexico City rail line. I mean, just mm-hmm. linking the capital of Canada through the Great Lakes region, down the Mississippi Basin, through Texas, all the way down to Mexico City. I mean, you get jobs, you get increased trade. It would be...
Well, that ain't going to happen because Mexico's going to build that wall, you know.
Oh, boy.
You do know Mexico will build the wall.
I'm going to say... Right here and now, I will be completely shocked if there's anything physical in terms of a barrier on the U.S.-Mexican border that was not there on January 19th, 2017.
Unless the U.S. builds it.
Right. It's stunning.
And let's face it, if you get more Roy Moores elected to Congress, it's conceivable suddenly the money for that's going to show up.
Yeah, but that's a big, 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 big if.
Oh, Lord in heaven.
I mean, Roy Moore is sort of his own creature. But even in...
That's an insult to creatures.
Alabama, which is probably the reddest of red states, he is pulling neck and neck with the Democrat. Which, you know, means, you know, you move that playing field to a state that's just slightly less arch conservative. And, you know, I'm not talking, you know, Connecticut. I mean, Missouri.
He gets blown out.
Oh, he loses, not even close. You know, Texas even. I don't think Roy Moore would get elected in Texas to a statewide Senate position.
Maybe. Depends. I don't know. You might be right.
I'm just saying.
I'm waffling.
You pick. Yeah, exactly. You pick these two. Is there fried chicken with those waffles? Because that's a nice Southern dish.
Hey, come on. I'm hungry. Don't do this. All right.
Fair enough. But you're right. And yes, we can count on entrepreneurialism. But there's only so many Elon Musks in this world. And, you know, at some point we have to decide it is actually in our general interest as Americans to get this stuff done.
He is Soren Fanning. I am Anthony Moretti. And unfortunately, we have to wrap up episode 10.
Is it that? Oh, yeah. Because I see the cattle prod. Okay.
Cut the clock.
I know.
The clock.
Welcome back, my friend.
It is good to be here. So remember, we have made America great again.
Well, we've at least offered the blueprint.
And there are far more issues. If you think you have one or two, remember that after you complete your listening enjoyment of this podcast, you can comment on my blog site. You can comment on our Facebook page, whatever the case might be. And we are about 10 days away.
Indeed.
From the great
anniversary.
November revolution.
Yes, in I think it's 12 days from now.
Da.
We will be looking at the 100th anniversary of the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia. So that would be November 7th of this year. You and I are going to be having a very special podcast for that.
We will that week. We will indeed. It was in some level it certainly was one of the half dozen defining moments of the 20th century, both in terms of how it began and most especially
how it ended.
Absolutely. That is a story for another time. Next week, when we get together next week, it will be November, won't it?
It will.
Holy cow. What are you dressing up as for Halloween?
I don't.
Oh, I was going to say, do you even have to? But then again, I have to look in the mirror, too. We got to go. He's Soren. I'm Anthony. That's John Roland, who likes to call himself the voice in our head. We'll talk to you next week on Upon Further Review with
the Podcast Profs.
Indeed.